This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, August 26th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the U.S. Interior Department announced this month that oil and gas leasing will resume on federal lands. It's the latest update in a legal tug of war between the Biden administration and the fossil fuel industry. The Audubon Society is asking city dwellers to turn off their lights at night to help migrating birds navigate the night skies during their seasonal migration. And NineHealth 365 launches a new digital platform for preventative care. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a public affair. Today, I'll speak with Sonora Jha, author of How to Raise a Feminist Son. Coming up at 9, it's our monthly radio book club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. Today, we'll hear an interview recorded just last night at the bookstore with best-selling Colorado author Peter Heller, speaking about his latest novel, a thriller called The Guide. Then at 9:30, a mix of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. First, we'll start with the headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has announced a penalty of $1.8 million against oil and gas company K.P. Kaufman. This comes after the conclusion this week of several days of hearings regarding alleged violations by the Denver family-owned business, which operates about 1,200 oil and gas wells located mostly in Weld County. The Denver Post reports the commission determined that the company violated rules on reporting spills, the status of flow lines, and failing to let agency officials know what the company was doing to correct problems. The commission also determined K.P. Kaufman improperly disposed of oil and gas wasted on a field near a pond and wetlands. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission will have another hearing on September 20th and 21st to determine if the company is engaged in a pattern of violations and if the company will be prohibited in receiving any new permits by the state. Colorado's Attorney General is recommending Congress look to the states for a federal regulatory framework for the marijuana industry. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Attorney General Weiser sent a letter to both House and Senate leaders saying that he feels that the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act is a promising step to broader legalization measures. He recommends Congress include states to help in the designing of a federal regulatory system for cannabis and rely on the expertise of states in the transition to a national market for cannabis. In July, a draft legislation of the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act was introduced that would remove federal nonviolent marijuana crimes and ultimately end the federal prohibition of cannabis, while allowing states to continue to determine their own cannabis laws. Weiser said that Colorado was the first state to have a regulated retail market for cannabis and has urged, along with other states, in the passage of the SAFE Banking Act, allowing cannabis companies to access the federal banking system. States that decriminalized or legalized cannabis saw reduced incarceration of marijuana users, which in turn reduced the impact on the criminal justice system and communities of color that are disproportionately affected by cannabis laws. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The Denver Center for Performing Arts will begin requiring proof of vaccination as of October 1st for audience members 12 and older at indoor performances at the art complex. Children under the age of 12 who are currently ineligible to receive a COVID-19 vaccine will be required to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 PCR test taken within 72 hours of a performance start time or a negative COVID-19 antigen test within 6 hours of a performance start time. The Denver Center for the Performing Arts will also require attendees 2 years and older to wear a mask. Denver Center for the Performing Arts CEO Janice Sinden says the COVID-19 policy decision was based on ongoing monthly audience surveys that show 96% of patrons have been vaccinated, with a vast majority responding that they would more likely attend a performance if there is a vaccination requirement. The town of Telluride has suspended issuing most new short-term rental licenses for 6 months. KOTO's Matt Hoisch has more.
Town Council passed an emergency ordinance to give time to further research the impacts of short-term rentals on the area and depressurize tension ahead of a November election expected to focus heavily on housing. The move comes amid an unprecedented number of new license applications. Town officials say there have been about 40 since the start of August. According to Telluride Mayor Delaney Young, that's much higher than the average of 7.
I'd say that's pretty much a land rush on STR licenses.
The emergency ordinance effectively caps the number of short-term rental licenses in circulation until February 2022. Several other Colorado mountain towns, including Crested Butte and Steamboat Springs, have made similar moves to temporarily restrict short-term rental growth, as they also struggle with housing shortages and a surge in local tourism. For KOTO, I'm Matt Hoisch.
For today's weather, both Boulder and Denver have a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly in the afternoon. Clouds will increase with a high near 86 for Boulder and a high near 90 for Denver. Tonight for Boulder, there is a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight, with skies partly cloudy and a low around 58. Denver has a 30% chance of thunderstorms and showers before midnight, with skies mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming clear with a low around 60. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 73 degrees. For KGNU, this is Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The U.S. Interior Department announced this month that oil and gas leasing will resume on federal lands. It's the latest update in a legal tug of war between the Biden administration and the fossil fuel industry over the president's pause on the federal leasing program, which he enacted almost immediately after taking office. Regardless of who the courts end up siding with, though, many advocates across the West say the entire system of federal energy development is in desperate need of reform. Will Walkie of KHOL in Jackson, Wyoming, has more.
Earlier this year, in Montana's Tendoy Mountains near the Idaho border, bighorn sheep were released into the wilderness in an attempt to reestablish a herd that had previously dominated the range. In video captured by the news site Montana Standard, the sheep sprang out of trucks and onto snow-packed fields, sprinting into a new life. But the wilderness those sheep and local outdoorsmen enjoy could face numbered days. The Tendoy Mountains are on a short list of western destinations that face potential fossil fuel development after the recent unpausing of Biden's pause on the federal oil and gas leasing program.
And so that's where the rubber really hits the road in the case of oil and gas leasing, these parcels that are leased off for nothing. I mean, less than the cost of a hamburger.
Aaron Weiss is deputy director for the Center for Western Priorities, a public lands advocacy group. He says when federal parcels are leased by oil and gas companies, it means they can't be preserved in any other way. In Wyoming, thousands of acres have already been sold for potential future development.
Even if all leasing stopped right now and never resumed, you would have a decade or more of production more or less where it is now, because of everything that the oil and gas industry has already leased and is already sitting on. So really, it's a question of what happens to these state economies over the next 10, 20 years. But that is a fundamental question anyway because of climate change.
President Biden enacted a moratorium on new oil and gas leases on federal lands within the first couple weeks of his administration, citing the need to reform a system that he says gives too much power to fossil fuel companies. But in the months since that decision, local politicians such as Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon and both of the Cowboy State senators have been extremely critical of the moratorium.
I want to make clear that leasing ban is having an impact on the economy and is doing nothing to solve the environmental problems that they're trying to address.
It makes no sense to send production to other countries when we could be doing it here.
Wyoming's energy has powered this nation for decades. So today, Wyoming and the Rocky Mountain West is under attack.
Not surprisingly, fossil fuel companies have been equally critical. On August 16th, the American Petroleum Institute filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, claiming that the federal government is obligated to hold lease sales. But Weiss says these companies are crying wolf about the moratorium's impact.
Anyone who says that this leasing pause has caused any effect to state economies is just simply full of it. There is no evidence of that whatsoever.
In fact, active drilling rigs increased in Wyoming over the past year, according to Gordon and the Casper Star Tribune. But a federal judge in Louisiana still ruled back in June that new oil and gas leasing must resume on public lands after a different lawsuit. The Department of the Interior has said it will appeal that ruling, but in the meantime, some public lands will officially go back up for sale starting this month.
That is not a process where you can just snap your fingers and lease a couple hundred thousand acres tomorrow. And with how long these things usually take, it means the first possible oil and gas lease sales that we could see could be coming up in the fourth quarter of this year.
Weiss says he thinks it's possible that the Louisiana ruling could be reversed in court. But what's more important is a fundamental rethinking of the value of our public lands.
We cannot treat oil and gas development. We cannot treat mining as the primary desired use of our public lands. There are more important uses of them, including conservation, including hunting and fishing.
A number of bills that would update the federal oil and gas leasing program are currently on the table before Congress. But one thing's for sure, according to Weiss, the fossil fuel industry hasn't shown that it's willing to compromise with politicians or advocacy organizations like his.
Oil and gas CEOs are responsible to their shareholders and not to their kids and grandkids. We've seen no interest in actually being responsible when it comes to fixing this system.
So intense legal battles between Biden and fossil fuel companies are going to persist for months, possibly years to come. The Department of the Interior announced Thursday that it'll review its coal leasing program as well. However, the Biden administration has already said a pause on new coal leases previously put in place under Obama and then reversed under Trump won't happen on his watch. Will Waukee, K12 News.
Every year, billions of birds migrate north in the spring and south in the fall, the majority of them flying at night, navigating the night sky. However, as they pass over big cities on their way, they can become disoriented by bright artificial lights, often causing them to collide with buildings or windows. The Audubon Society has launched a Lights Out campaign. KGNU's Elena Claver spoke with Zach Hutchinson, Community Science Coordinator of Audubon Rockies.
Lights Out Colorado is a joint effort by Audubon Rockies, the Colorado chapter of the International Dark Sky Association, Denver Audubon Society, and some municipalities that are involved as well. There's the city of Denver, the city of Fort Collins. We're trying to get other cities on board. And so the problem is lights, artificial light created by humans, attracts birds and disorients birds when they're migrating at night. And over 80% of our migratory bird species migrate at night. And so this light can be disorienting them, where, yes, it can cause collisions with buildings and windows, but also it can cause them just to circle in confusion, burning through precious energy stores that are needed for these multi-thousand mile trips where birds are going from Canada into Central and South America. And as they're passing overhead, anytime they get knocked off course because of storms, anything like that, they already have enough stressors. And then you add in artificial light that can draw them in, and it adds just more stress to an already stressful time in their annual life cycle. And they're doing this twice a year. And so that's the problem. And the solution is fairly simple. And what we're asking for is in the spring and in the fall that everyone just shuts out their lights that, you know, aren't needed for safety reasons, or shade your windows if you're talking indoor lights, but shut out your lights starting at dark until morning. Or long-term solutions, shield your lights, add shielding to your lights so it focuses the light to the ground where you need it and it doesn't bleed into the sky, creating that artificial, that sky glow. And other long-term solutions, if you need safety lights, changing them to motion activated. If you leave lights on in buildings, shading the window so that that light doesn't escape the building. So very simple solutions that we're asking people to participate by just simply shutting out your lights. And for right now, we're asking from now through the end of September, just shut out your lights. It's as simple as that. And other small steps that can be taken for the future, but for short-term goals right now, shutting out your lights can save a lot of birds.
So some of these things are free and actually would save money if big skyscrapers would turn off more of their lights. And some of the things, such as shielding or motion detectors, might cost money. How do you convince corporations or building owners to do the right thing for the birds?
Well, you know, obviously the monetary part of it is always going to play a role. Going from leaving a light on 24 hours a day or even 12 hours a day and turning to motion activated, they're going to save more money in the long term. And shielding actually helps. If you have lights up for safety, if light is escaping up into the sky, then the safety light is not serving as much of the role as it needs. Whereas when you add shielding, it focuses the light all down to the area that you're trying to light for safety. And so it just improves the safety and the cost effectiveness of lighting. And then also there's just the ethic of just wanting to have a healthier community, because this is also all healthy for humans. Having bright artificial light all night long, it's not good for human health as well as bird health. And so, you know, you're serving multiple groups, human and bird, and probably other wildlife and people that want to go out and enjoy the night sky by you know, making these small, simple steps. And again, just the easiest and, as you mentioned, the freest is to simply shut out your lights from now through the end of September if they're not necessary.
How can people find out more information about this and also how they might be able to help request that big building owners do the right thing and shut off the lights?
To learn more about Lights Out Colorado, simply Google search Lights Out Colorado. And all the top options are all of the web pages from the various partners to provide more information about the Lights Out Colorado program. But also, it allows those who are going to be shutting out their lights to take the pledge and to put their name on this growing list of, you know, close to 400 people, I think right now is where we're at, in people who've taken the pledge and are shutting out their lights during migration season. And then there's also information on how to contact building owners if you don't know them, if you do know them, how to contact city officials, county officials, you know, just government officials to have that role played in it as well, because a lot of artificial light is coming from our infrastructure through local government. So we have all information on how to reach out to these various groups and to really start this ball rolling and to make this change that's healthier for birds and humans.
Zach Hutchinson, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Best-selling author Peter Heller returns to the Radio Book Club for a fourth visit to speak about his latest novel, a thriller called The Guide.
We as human beings are responsible right now for the end of it all. I mean, we're in the middle of the sixth great mass extinction, and we caused it. What an incredible time to bear witness. And, you know, we need to be telling stories to each other about that so that we can try and emotionally get a grasp of it and do something about it before it's too late.
This book is set in Colorado at Kingfisher Lodge, nestled in a canyon on a mile and a half of the most pristine river water on the planet. It's also set against a backdrop of a virus that's plagued America for years. Tune in Thursday morning, August 26th at 9 a.m. to hear Peter Heller speak about The Guide, right here on KGNU's Radio Book Club.
More than 2 million people have visited 9 health fairs in the past 41 years around Colorado. A recent survey done by 9Health 365 showed that more than 50% of those surveyed said they avoided or postponed preventative care during the pandemic, and that certain screenings, like those to detect colon cancer, dropped even further. The pandemic forced the low-cost healthcare provider to create a new model to serve clients. It combines the essential blood chemistry screening with text-based telehealth and unlimited advice from medical professionals. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Amy Friel, 9Health 365's Director of Digital Programs, about the new platform.
So like many companies, the pandemic really made us pivot. We had to cancel all of our spring 2020 fairs. While we did bring back a few fairs in the fall, including one in Boulder, and we figured out how to do fairs in a way that makes people feel safe and comfortable during the pandemic, we realized, like many companies, we really needed to have a digital option. And for us, we realized we don't want to just be there for you one day out of the year. We wanted to offer a service that would help you every day improve and look after your preventive health. What we have created is something we call 365 Comprehensive, and it combines the most important elements of preventive health care, affordable and easy to use package. We package together essential blood chemistry screenings, text-based telehealth, and unlimited advice from medical professionals. And we believe that this expands access to preventive health care for everyone.
Preventable health is the way to go, not to go to the doctor when you're already sick. And that happens a lot with communities that do not have access to health insurance or to the yearly checkups that are basic when you have a primary doctor. In the years that you have been providing services to the community, how many people have benefit from the services that you have provided? Do you have numbers?
I know it's in the millions, you know, fares twice a year over 41 years. That's an awful lot of Coloradans. But, you know, what's wonderful is that with our new digital offerings, we can reach people anytime, every day, in any corner of the state, whether there's a fare or not. And I want to mention, in addition to the telehealth service, for which you only need a smartphone, you do not need a computer, you do not need broadband, and we know that's important for many people who don't have that type of internet connection. If you can get to a library and get to a public computer, on our website, we offer free online screenings that can help you figure out if you're at risk for diabetes, heart disease, or perhaps even sleep apnea. We are really committed to making preventive health tools available to people through the internet anytime that they need them and anytime it's convenient for them.
Can you explain the difference from going to the doctor in a virtual way?
So many people may be familiar with what we call traditional telehealth. You have to make an appointment. You have to have a computer and be able to connect with video. So you need a certain amount of bandwidth, right? Otherwise, it's all staticky and you lose the sound and all of that. By contrast, what we offer is text-based telehealth. If you have the app on your phone, it is as easy as texting a friend. And what happens is through our partner, CirrusMD, you get a doctor on the line to answer your text in under a minute. And it is amazing. So for example, if you have chest pains or something really urgent, there are times when you, God forbid, sometimes you have to call 911. But you know, there's an awful lot of categories where you have a concern, you have a question, maybe you have some troubling symptoms. You might have questions about COVID. You might have questions about, you know, your child was stung by a bee and it's swelling and is that normal? These are things that you can handle through texting with a physician. If you need to snap a picture of with your phone, you can text that too. That is a way that we know we are saving people time and money because we save them time. You don't have to go to the urgent care. You don't have to go to your doctor where you may be sitting in the office, you know, for who knows how long. For some things, you might save yourself a trip to the ER. So it definitely saves you time. But even more importantly, we love the fact that unlike insurance, there is no copay, there is no deductible, there is no monthly premium. So basically businesses and organizations, if you pay one time $99 for each employee for the whole year, then that employee, it's free for them. And thus they can take advantage of it as much as they want. It is unlimited texting for that one low fee. So we do feel that that really can save people, as I said, time and money with high quality care. These are all board certified physicians. They are currently practicing. They are ER physicians. They are internal medicine. They are family practice. You know, they're all fully licensed and credentialed. They are here for you when you need them, whatever your issue is.
Remind our listeners what these fares have been doing, how they have been provided, and now how they are modifying in order to continue providing the services.
So, for example, we have figured out how to do drive-through fares. Now, you would still need to register in advance, but then we can set it up. Well, you know, now, of course, with the pandemic, many of us have tried this, you know, drive-through prescriptions at the drugstore or, you know, drive-through pick up at retail. So same idea. If you have an appointment, you can do the paperwork while you're still in the car. So it's a very quick trip. Park, go to the table. The phlebotomist will take your blood. Perhaps they will take your blood pressure too, and then send you on your way. So because we have appointments and because so much of it is drive-through, we minimize the amount of time that people need to be standing in a line or, you know, standing in proximity to one another, and on top of any other, all the other precautions.
I have been speaking with Amy Friel. She is the Director of Digital Programs for 9Health 365. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
And that does it for today's Morning Magazine here on listener-supported community radio. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Rosanna Longo-Better, and Elena Claver for their contributions to today's program.